and welcome to another episode of Downtime with the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Tayla, and the branch librarian at the Oak Lawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Liz Gattaco. I'm the children's librarian at the Cumberland Public Library, and I'm a content creator by the name of Cosbrarian, and my pronouns are she, her.
So thank you for joining me. People who have been longtime listeners of the show might remember Liz coming on to talk about cosplay. But if you've joined us more recently, then you might be listening to Liz for the first time. But she has joined us today to talk about her online short form video content.
Ooh. I like it.
That may be transforming into other mediums as it evolves, called effed up fairy tales. You can insert what the effed up means in your brain when you search it online. And it's kind of all these interesting fairy tale retellings and versions that we don't always see, you know, in the Disneyfication of fairy tales and folk tales.
Absolutely.
But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with what have you been reading?
Well, I am usually only reading one of two things, something to do with fairy tales or something on the Rhode Island Children's Book Award list. So for my personal reading, I just finished an incredible book called Disfigured on Fairy Tales, Disability, and Making Space by Amanda Leduc. Sorry, that's not your name, Amanda. but it was, it's basically about the intersection of fairy tales and disability, social justice. Amanda has cerebral palsy, so it's a little bit of a memoir in talking about how, you know, she grew up with this, with these fairy tales, and especially Disney, just being thrust upon us. And it was very eye-opening. I have been trying to build my awareness with disability, especially as a fairy tale enthusiast, because it's just rife with issues, with many problematic issues, but disability in particular. And she points out a lot of stuff, you know, that things that, of course, you probably would just think of off the top of your head, like Snow White and the Seven Dwarves and how that is hurtful for little people. And but even things that, like, I probably wouldn't have normally thought about, like just the Cinderella tale and its concentration on these pretty perfect feet, and what that means to someone who needs to buy several pairs of shoes for their comfort, you know, who's never going to fit in a beautiful high-heeled shoe like that. And the Little Mermaid, who can, like, move beautifully and freely, but still, like, longs for this, you know, two able-bodied legs, as the happily ever after. It's so well written, and I learned a lot and enjoyed reading it as well.
Yeah, that does sound interesting. It made me think of when I was in college. This was one of my favorite classes that I took in college. I took a Shakespeare, is the comedies and the histories was the focus, because our college split it up because there's so many plays you could take that you could take one about the comedies and histories or one about the tragedies and the romances. And I think one or two of the problem plays got mentioned in that one, because it took that course too, because I'm a huge Shakespeare nerd.
Got to do the whole thing.
The one that was the comedies and the histories, each kind of professor takes their own, like, theoretical kind of, like, theme for the course. And this one was about queer theory.
Cool.
But we read Richard II as one of the histories. The essay we kind of looked at ended up kind of being an intersection of queer theory and, like, disability studies, like looking at disability.
Yeah, that's a great example of it.
Yeah.
And because, the vilification of disability is a huge factor as well.
Yeah. So it was, like, vilifying him, but it also was talking about how, like, he had become kind of like an eroticism to him as a character.
Interesting.
Is what it was talking about. And one of the best, the kind of text for the course along with all of the plays was Shakespeare. It's a collection of essays, and I know the editor's last name begins with M, but I don't remember it at all.
I want to read that.
I own it. I'll let you borrow it if you'd like. I bought it because I enjoyed this class so much, but some great essay titles, including the one for Richard III, which again, I'm going to self-censor myself, but it's F the Disabled, the prequel. And it's compared to Richard III, but the title comes from that it also ends up talking about this like comedy, I think like special or routine from this disabled comic that was called that.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was kind of trying to make connections of like Richard III walked so this other thing could run kind sure. of thing. So it was like really interesting and like, yeah, but a lot of great chapter titles in Shakespeare of essay titles.
Yeah, that sounds great. And it's not surprising because folklore and Shakespeare are, they are with each other.
Yes, that's true. Yes. Yeah, he took a lot of, you know, he grabbed a lot of ideas that were in the cultural consciousness at the time and has become a touchstone of the cultural consciousness.
What have you been reading?
What have I been reading? Oh, okay. I did think about it for a minute. So I started, because it is a very hefty book, even for a graphic novel adaptation, because it's adapting a very hefty book, the graphic novel adaptation of Stamped from the Beginning.
Oh.
So Abram X. Kendi's Stamped from the Beginning has had many adaptations at this point for younger audiences. And then he collaborated with Joel Christian Gill to make a graphic novel adaptation of it. And so I did read the YA version.
Yeah, I read that one too.
So I do like know the points that Dr. Kendi hit on in the original, but it is really interesting to see it written out in this graphic novel format. But because it is like such kind of dense stuff, it's like one of the very few graphic novels that like I read a chapter and then put it down. Like, because it's just like a lot, but good stuff.
Is the graphic novel aimed more at adults or is it another young people's version?
I would say it's probably aimed more at adults because I feel like it's trying to cover the stuff that's Stamped. It is an adaptation of Stamped from the Beginning, the original 500 plus page book.
Okay. Yeah.
So it seems like he really is trying to adapt and hit all the points from the original book. So I think maybe teen, like high schoolers in a class could use it and it would be a very helpful tool for them to discuss the points of the book. But yeah, it's definitely not like anti-racism, the guide for kids.
Maybe he can bring Mr. Reynolds in to do new, like the remix of the graphic novel for young readers.
Yeah.
I say that only because I know exactly what kids I would hand it to. So
yeah, no, I know. It was really great and a really great opportunity when the versions for different audiences came out.
Yeah, I think graphic novels are the perfect format for history and for social justice. So the combination of the two is perfect, a natural fit.
Nonfiction in general, I really like.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily been on a kick with my reading, but just like on a kick with my advocating for graphic nonfiction and like just a real fascination and interest to explore it more because I think it really is a ripe format.
Yeah, it humanizes it. So
yeah.
You don't think of it as a dusty textbook as much.
And all the racist things are in like black word bubbles that are like dripping.
Ooh.
So it's like, it's an interesting visual representation of like racist ideas.
Absolutely.
Instead of having to keep just being like, and then this racist idea, like.
Sure.
So yeah, it's, I've been enjoying it so far, but it's weird to say for a graphic novel, but I'm not that far in because it really, I felt like it demanded some time.
Yeah. It's good to sit with. Absolutely. I can see the need for that, both on an emotional level and intellectual level.
Yeah. Also, it was late at night when I started reading it.
Oh, well, there you go. If you want to learn something, there's an end point to the evening.
So besides reading, have you been watching anything interesting?
Yes. I recently finished Avatar The Last Airbender for the first time. I know I'm late to the party.
Better late than never.
Absolutely. Yeah, yes, absolutely. I'm figuring out that absolutely is apparently the word that I say over and over again. So I loved it. I loved it so much. I'm making it part of our library theme for Reading is Elemental, the National Library Card Sign-Up Month.
That's actually really awesome.
Isn't that a good idea? it's a little more niche than Pixar. So I'll throw a little Pixar in there. But,
yeah.
You know, I'm hoping that like the kids will choose, you know, what kind of bender they will be. I'm going to make a big bulletin board of Aang reading while he's in the Avatar state. So I'm going to nerd out.
Yeah.
And have a great time. And then as far as more contemporary stuff, I've been watching both Only Murders in the Building and The After Party, which I think are very good shows to enjoy together, both being murder mysteries, both being an ensemble pieces, both being comedies, though like Only Murders in the Building, I'd say, is more of like a farcical, like Frasier type of comedy. And The After Party is a little goofier. But I'm loving both of those. And of course, they've started doing more of they haven't made it bingeable yet, which is driving me crazy. But for a mystery show, that's probably wise.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard about Only Murders in the Building, but I know nothing about The After Party.
The After Party is a murder mystery starring Tiffany Haddish as the detective, all-star casts in both seasons. And the first season, the premise is that it takes place at an after party for a high school reunion where one of the members is like this like Justin Bieber famous type of guy, singer slash actor, played by DeFranco. And he's murdered at his own after party. And Tiffany Haddish, when her method of solving the mystery is she likes to talk to everyone who was there to get their side of the story. And when she interviews them, she says to them, "I like to think of these as your mind movies." So each episode is dedicated to each suspect's side of the story. But when they tell their story, it's filmed in the style of different movies.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So someone has a rom-com episode. Someone has a musical. Someone has a historical romance. So it's very fun to watch in that element. But then you still want to piece together the information, of course, for the mystery itself. And they've carried that over to the second season. It's a different type of after party, but we're still enjoying everyone's mind movies.
Yeah, that does sound like fun, because I'm not usually a murder mystery person, but the added kind of like genre satire sounds like a fun element.
Yeah, it mixes it up for you and makes it fun, even if you're like, I don't know if I'm gonna like invest in this. Although I do find that the characters are very enjoyable, and I did invest in the mystery a bit. There's some very funny poking fun at Hollywood with like Dave Franco's character. They do this like he's in like a biographical film about Hall and Oates with Channing Tatum. It's very funny. There's a Hungry Hungry Hippos movie. I like it. And the second season after party is at like a wedding after party. And they got some more big names in it. So I'm loving it.
All right. I'll have to add that to the list.
It's on Apple. And I got to say, they're just killing it.
I'm out.
You're not going to do it?
I don't have Apple.
It's the cheapest one.
Oh, okay.
You should borrow someone's, and I'll tell you all of the shows to blast through. You got to do Severance. You got to do Silo. You got to do Lasso. You got to do Shrinking. What is this? Are we sponsored by Apple today? Apparently.
I hope not.
Sorry.
I was going to be like, no shade, but that's not true. There is some shade.
You can shade. But they know what they're doing picking TV. I'll say that much.
Because I feel like they're not doing a good job of like advertising that they have good TV.
I guess so. They're kind of under the wire. I mean, I think Ted Lasso was so popular, maybe they don't feel like they have to.
Yeah, they were like, we got people with Ted Lasso.
But there's been very few things I've started there that I've been like, meh. So
I might do a free trial.
Do it. What are you watching? Anything good?
Yeah, I've kind of just been on a tear of like enjoying internet content and less like shows. So I've been catching up on Critical Role because I got a couple episodes behind, which I've talked about on the show before. But if this is the first episode you're clicking on, welcome. Thank you. But Critical Role is a live action D&D role-playing game, so they stream their game to audiences to watch. And I've also been catching up on stuff on Dropout, which is College Humor's streaming service. So there are some episodes of Make Some Noise that I hadn't seen. There was a new one that just came out where they got Wayne Brady to come on.
Oh, star of my heart.
They call it karaoke. Now, well, the first time they did, they called it karaoke night. Now they called it Make Some Noise Aroki. But it's essentially like a karaoke format, but they're parody songs because they're by artists that are real, but the songs are made up. So they're given that artist as like a prompt of like the style kind of of the music, but then they need to make up a whole new song to fit that song title. And then they basically pointed it out that he was like, so we've come full circle because you basically invented like the format of like improv song parodies. And he's like, and then we stole it and made a show about it, and now we're gonna bring you on the show to do the thing that we stole. So that was a lot of fun. I don't know, some of the stuff eventually will like be on College Humor's YouTube for free. So it's possible that that episode, like, eventually, after, you know, like, all their subscribers have gotten their hands on it and watched it, that it might come out, or clips of it'll come out.
There's a gal on TikTok, she'll say, what if Adele collaborated with whatever, Taylor Swift?
Okay, yeah.
And she nails it every time. You can hear, like musically, the lyrics. I don't understand how she does it, but she's a genius. I just love her stuff. If you're a music nerd, you'll dig it. It's not even parody. Like, she treats it pretty, I mean, she has fun with it. But, like, they could be real songs on the radio.
That's what, like, this is the second time they've done this format of this, like, song parody of this show. And I think they ended up releasing MP3s of the songs because they had turned out, some of them had like turned out so good. They just, the people they picked to do it are just great, you know, like talented singers. They jokingly say that the guy who plays the piano is the real winner of the show every time.
Oh, sure.
Because it's also like a game show, but it's like, it's kind of like Whose Line, where it's a game show, but the points, not that they don't matter, but like the host makes them up.
Yeah.
So he just picks a winner. But they're like, the real winner of this is our guy who's playing piano.
There could be an interesting wave in music with this type of thing, I think, because only because recently some like Disney movies like Encanto have had like breakout hits. And now the Barbie movie, not just the Ken song, but like every single song on that soundtrack is really specific to the movie, but still they're all bops. Like, I wonder if that will become more of a thing on the Billboard top 100, these like very specific plot driven songs. I would like to see that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's like songs that are coming out of very specific like media moments.
Yeah. Or something like these parody songs. I mean, Weird Al has had and is still having his moment in a way. So why not Wayne Brady?
Yeah.
I mean, Wayne Brady should be on the Billboard top 100 anyway. Make it happen.
Yeah, they also recently, this Dropout was trying to, I can't remember if, I think it was Game Changer actually, which is another game show format that they have that Make Some Noise is actually like a spinoff of. It was like, because the premise of Game Changers is it's a different game every time. Like, it's a different game show, and like most of the time the players are figuring out what the rules of the game show are as they're playing.
Fantastic.
So, and one of them was this like make the noise format, which ended up being a lot of like impressions, improv scenes, kind of like props stuff. And they were like, so good, we spun it off unchanged. So it became like its own show. Because you were saying about getting Wayne Brady on Billboard top 100, they were trying to campaign for Game Changers to win an Emmy, but they like missed the deadline for like the special presentation thing. So they were trying to, like, through sheer power of social media, mostly Twitter is where I saw it on, that they were like trying to create hashtags to be like game Emmy for Game Changer. It didn't happen.
Aww.
But they were like, we feel so affirmed by everyone who like jumped on this bandwagon to try to make it happen, even though it didn't happen.
Yeah, just bad timing for them since Twitter's imploding, really. I think
that's true. That's true. And I still keep going and look at it. I'm so mad at myself.
It's hard when you build a community someplace and now it's kind of crumbling around you, but you still get your people.
Right? I'm like, that's where the online librarians are.
Yeah. It's very low stakes social media to either, both as like a participant and as a putter out there person.
Yeah. And there's part of me that's like, should I go to something else? I tried Mastodon for a hot second, but Mastodon, at least the like library circles on Mastodon felt like way more intellectual than the library circles on Twitter.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was a lot of like, here is my research project.
Oh, it's probably a lot of academia.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, I'm just here to hear people's hot takes about books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like just like weird patron interactions that they had, good patron interactions that they had. I love a good like kid story.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it's different than like something new coming to a new app where now all of a sudden everyone's like, ooh, and, you know, trying to rebuild something.
Yeah.
That already had such a great foundation before it fell apart is a totally different story. So it's very fractured.
But I literally have in my to-do list, go through Twitter bookmarks before website explodes.
Oh, that's good. That's a good idea. I just recently deleted all mine, which tragically deleted my interaction with LeVar Burton, though I took a screenshot of it. So it's there forever in my Google Drive. But I had to make a decision and I decided to wipe it clean.
Wait, you deleted your Twitter or your bookmarks?
Actually, I deleted my tweets because at one point I was okay. Like, I'm getting off this thing. But I'm not. The problem is because I'm a content creator, I like to keep my usernames everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So I deleted all my tweets and I just put like in my tagline, find me other places. But of course, like since it still exists, I still log on there once in a while. And I'm like liking stuff. It's slowly rebuilding my my interactions. But yeah, so I had deleted all of my content from it, which included some good memories, I will say. I'm not very active there, so there wasn't a lot.
Hmm.
But I was a big Reading Rainbow kid, so naturally that was a big moment for me.
Yeah. I forget who recently said to me that they met LeVar Burton, and I was like, I'm so jealous as like a librarian and as a Star Trek fan.
Well, I did at New York Comic Con. Same thing. He was there for a TNG, like the whole cast was there, except for Patrick Stewart, because he gets his own table. But yeah, so it was nice to say hi to him. And then it was right around when he was working on the Reading Rainbow app. And I told him I was a librarian. And he said, oh, well, you should meet my friend Brent. And he introduced me to Brent Spiner. And I am not a TNG person. But man, I was like, I have so many friends that are going to be so jealous that I just fist bumped with Data.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break. So let's talk about Cranston Public Library.
Please, yeah, to bring poetry to our patrons. Yeah, we're already talking about being online anyway. All without leaving the comfort
true.
Of home.
So we'll go right no into internet, computer, the things that you are doing required. Online. It was kind of a pandemic CPL project for you, right?
Will be available
yes. So
every Tuesday
what
afternoon.
Happened was
to listen,
in 2021, it was February 26th, and I was at work,
and be sure to check
heard
back
someone say,
to hear what's
oh, it's National Telefairy
Tale Day. For more information
day.
About this service,
and I'd
please
been on
visit CranstonLibrary.org
probably for,
slash
I don't know,
on the line.
6 months or so. I had just joined for something else to watch while we were all at home. I'm a singer, and my
Do
band wasn't
reading,
playing out,
but miss chatting
and
with people
TikTok
about what
fun
you've read?
To collaborate
Why not join our
musicians.
Group?
So I was doing a little bit
There
singing.
Are a variety
I
of meetings
did like one video
every
running
month,
around my
including
library
the
while it was closed
book
by myself and singing that
sex,
I found a bunch of like
YA
librarians
adults,
on TikTok who love that.
And reading in
so
the hall
I had like a little group
for
of
more
friends,
information
but it wasn't
and
really
to register,
anything. But I
visit
thought to myself,
CranstonLibrary.org
my librarian friends would love to hear my favorite fairy tale because it is messed up. And I love telling it. It's Our Library by Grimm. And so I did. And then all of a sudden, there were more people and they wanted more fairy tales and they really wanted more weird ones. So very quickly, my series, and I'm just going to go for it, Taylor, Fucked Up Fairy Tales was born. I think within the third or fourth episode, I made up a theme song and that became a thing. And so, yeah, the concentration is on fairy tales that are a little more sordid, that are a little more saucy, perhaps a little more brutal, and not just the popular ones, though people really like hearing those, you know, the princess tales, but maybe some lesser known ones as well. And it's really blossomed into so many different series, too, of just enjoying fairy tales and folk tales in general. So yeah, so it was a mini pandemic, which was the best time to become a content creator because there was just so much of an audience. But even now that it's a little less intense, luckily I've had a great audience build and they've stuck with me.
So when you had heard about this Tell a Fairy Tale Day, that was an avenue for you to explore something you already really enjoyed.
Absolutely. I like the darker versions of fairy tales have always been a part of my life. I think I was like 7 when the Disney's The Little Mermaid came out. And my mom has never been afraid of like sharing literature with me and my sister that maybe is a little heavier. So she got me a collection of Hans Christian Andersen's tales when that movie came out and said, oh, you should read the story it's based on. It's very different. And it was, and I loved it. You know, it's very romantic and dramatic and sad. And she also gave me like a picture book of Oscar Wilde's The Happy Prince, which is the saddest fairy tale I've ever read in my life. It's so sad. It's very beautiful, though. I highly recommend it. And so it's been one of those things that's sort of popped in and out of my life here and there. You know, I kind of became a huge Andersen fan when I was a kid. Then later on in high school, when I got into musical theater, I did Into the Woods. And then I started really getting into the Grimm version of tales because that's a musical that's combines a lot of the darker Grimm tales and explores the darkness that can happen after Happily Ever After. That's when I first read Allerleirauh. And so, yeah, they've always kind of been on the periphery for me and then like kind of dipping back into my life at certain moments. And here they came back into my life at this moment. Before that, you know, I would maybe sometimes pull it out at parties. If fairy tales came up, I could say, oh, you know, do you know this fairy tale? 'Cause it's a lot of fun. I remember there was a children's book called A Tale Dark and Grim that they just made a Netflix series of in the last couple of years. That's another kind of moment that dark fairy tales popped up. And I don't think I'm the only one. I know I'm not the only one who likes them because, you know, I mean, Neil Gaiman is so famous. You know, people like him and Angela Carter have like solidified that as a genre, I think. And of course, I've been a teen librarian, so there's tons of twists on fairy tales in YA. Yeah, even if I hadn't found this audience online, I think it would always be an important part of my life. And fairy tales do that. They come back in cycles, whether it's in larger pop culture or whether it's in a more personal way, I believe, for readers as well.
And so I don't want to say because I don't want to get the name wrong, but your favorite fairy tale.
Allerleirauh?
Yeah.
You want me to tell it?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it at all.
Yeah. All right. So Allerleirauh is specifically the Brothers Grimm version of this tale, which is part of a genre of fairy tales. There's many different versions of it that have a very upsetting premise. And the premise that is actually the name of this type of fairy tale is The King Who Wants to Marry His Daughter. So spoiler alert, it's gross. But it works out in the end. It's a happy ending. So Allerleirauh is about a princess whose mother is the most beautiful queen in the world. The queen and the king are both very in love with each other. But then the queen gets sick and it's fatal. There's no hope for her. And so the queen's on her deathbed and she has a request of her husband. She says, I know you need to remarry. Promise me, though, that if you do remarry, you will find a woman who is as beautiful as I am with the same shade of golden hair. And he's like, sure, I'll do that. But that's an impossible request. But I promise I love you. She dies. Very sad. King goes deep into mourning. He's not even thinking about getting remarried again. But one day his counselors are like, look, you only have a daughter. You need an heir because, of course, they couldn't even like fancy the idea that the daughter could maybe manage the kingdom. So they're like, so we got to get you married again so you can have a son. So they start like trying to find him women, but it's just not working out. And at some point, the king realizes that the most beautiful woman around with the perfect shade of golden hair is his own young daughter, who is of age, yes, but obviously not interested in marrying her own father. In some versions of the tale, he kind of like goes mad with his grief. But Grimm versions are very cut and dry, so we don't really get that kind of explanation. He's just like, ah, yes, this is the solution. No one likes this idea. No one at all, except for the king. His daughter is mortified, of course. His counselors are like, no, maybe not. But he is intent on it. So what I love in this version is that Allerleirau, who is the princess, that's her eventual name, is she gets herself out of this situation. She first tries to stall for time. She demands these like three different dresses of him. She says, I can only marry you if you give me a dress as golden as the sun, one as silver as the moon, and one as sparkling as the stars. And somehow he gets those for her. So then she says, all right, well, now I need a cloak that's made with a piece of fur from every animal in the kingdom. He gets that for her, RIP to many animals in the kingdom. Things don't work out for them in fairy tales so well. So that's something to keep in mind if you're into them. So she gets this cloak. She takes all of her dresses. She packs them into a walnut shell, which is an incredible feat in itself. She disguises herself. She like dirties up her skin and she puts on this big, weird, multi-fur cloak. And she sets out into the world to escape this horrible situation. Now, she happens to be engaged to a prince in another kingdom. This is something that obviously her father was like, the engagement's off. So she starts heading toward that kingdom. But interestingly, she does not choose to knock on his door and be like, hey, I'm your betrothed and I'm in this bad situation. No, she goes in disguise. I don't know why. Again, you have to fill in a lot of gaps in fairy tales. She shows up in the forest and her fiance's guardsmen find her and they think that she's this like weird animal, but then they realize it's a person and they're like, ugh. But they put her to work in the kitchen. Very common motif in fairy tales. So then essentially comes like the Cinderella part of the story where the prince hosts the ball and she decides to show up. And so she goes to the first knight in that dress as golden as the sun. And the prince is like, ooh, who is this? She seems familiar, but I don't know. Maybe they've never seen each other before. Maybe it was one of those betrothals like Anne of Cleves where they just like sent each other a portrait. And so he's like, this lady's hot and vaguely familiar, but I don't know who she is. She disappears, and that night in his soup, he finds this golden ring, and he's like, I think I gave a ring like this to my betrothed. This happens over three more nights. She wears the moon dress. She leaves a golden spindle in his soup. She wears the star dress to the last night. And finally, the prince is like, I got to figure out who this dame is. So he questions Allerleirau. That's what they call her now. That means many-furred coat. He brings her up. He says, you've been cooking me this soup. What's the deal with these golden objects? She won't tell him. Finally, the last night, he like grabs her hand before she can escape and the cloak falls off her and she's wearing the sparkly star dress. And he's like, it's you. And she's like, it's me. And they get married and we do not know what happens to the dad. And I'm just going to assume he rots in hell at the end. That's my favorite fairy tale. Isn't it weird?
When you started telling it, I guess I just didn't recognize like the original Grimm's name because isn't the magic fish like a Vietnamese like a retelling of a Vietnamese version of this story?
Yes, The Magic Fish, incredible graphic novel by Trung Ling Nguyen, one of my favorite books of all time. He tells three fairy tales in that. And so he retells another version, which is called Donkey Skin, and that's the French version, and kind of adds his spin to it. I believe in his version, instead of the father wanting to marry the daughter, he makes the father betroth her to like an ogre, which sometimes happens in some versions of that story. It's not the father, but it is like an
really
undesirable
bad guy,
marriage.
If I remember correctly. Yeah.
So she escapes that way. And Donkey Skin, I don't remember if this happened in The Magic Fish. That's a French version where she has a fairy godmother who kind of helps her out of the situation. That's very common. So the reason I specifically like the Grimm is there's no fairy godmother. She's just like, all right, got to fix this.
And she just
and she does.
Magically is able to put three dresses into a walnut.
Into a walnut shell. She's a good packer. I don't. They must have been skinny too, like the like Marilyn Monroe's Happy Birthday dress. They said you could crumble it and it would fit in one hand. So that's what I'm imagining. That's these gauzy gowns and they just bloop. They crumple up.
Is the Happy Birthday dress the one that Kim Kardashian ended up wearing?
Oh, it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And she ripped it.
Yeah.
Not a fan. That dress does sort of sparkle like the stars, so.
It does. Yeah.
There's some great adaptations of it. There's a movie of Donkey Skin, the French version with Catherine Deneuve. Is that her name? That's a musical. I've heard it's great. I haven't watched it yet. But she literally wears this big giant like donkey head cloak. It's very funny. There's Jim Henson's Storyteller did an episode with A Tale Called Sap Sorrow. That's an adaptation of it. And it kind of combines that with more of the Cinderella motifs because she tries on like a shoe and stuff and they're stepsisters and things. I saw that when I was little, and when I reread the Grimm one, it like came rushing back to me, and I just remembered like the three dresses, and that was a big pull for it for me when I was a kid, like any fairy tale fashion. And then kind of rereading it as an adult and appreciating more of how capable she is. The Sap Sorrow version is really good. They give her a lot of agency. She actually like challenges the prince. They like build a friendship when she's in her disguise, and she's like, you know, you're so obsessed with this woman at the ball, but I'm your, you know, closest confidant. What's up with that, dude? What's up with that? So it's a good fairy tale.
What's up with that?
Yeah, and there's some very good, there's a really good adult fiction adaptation of it by Robin McKinley called Deerskin. That one really leans into the trauma of the tale as you imagine could occur with this sort of premise. So I will say trigger warnings abide for that one, but it's extremely well written and beautiful.
All right. So before we go on to the last chapter, what are you kind of imagining for the future of effed up fairy tales?
Well, I what am I hoping? I am working on a book pitch. That would be very cool. My followers have asked for it, so I've started doing that. It's very different. It's very weird to like take my online, you know, video content persona and try to put that into a short story persona. But the challenge has been fun. I'm always looking for ways to mix up my creativity. So something like that would be very cool. But if that didn't work out in the grand scheme of things, I think I just want to keep telling stories. I'm not an expert. I'm an enthusiast. I always have so much to learn, you know, especially like having just read this like book Disfigured, like now I'm like seeing things in a different way. And when I first began, it was very like this sensational fairy tale, but now I take some different approaches to it. I just hope that I can keep entertaining people and making people laugh. I do worry sometimes that with fairy tales, because so many motifs are repeated, sometimes I start telling a story and I'm like, have I already done this one? But luckily, I mean, that's the thing about fairy tales is people like to hear them over and over. There's a comfort in the repetitiveness of them, for sure. I've loved the connections I've made. That's been a really great aspect of this. I've met, you know, other authors and folklorists, and having that kind of fun little community has been great, because people, you know, when people find a storyteller they like, they kind of want to hear any sort of story that the person is willing to tell. So it's exposed me to a bunch of great folk tales that I've never read before, because people have said, oh, I have this one in, you know, I come from Lithuania and we have this one called, you know, Agla, the Queen of the Serpents. And I was like, oh, I've never read that. That's an incredible fairy tale. And so, you know, I have these little like offshoot series like Around the World in 80 Folk Tales and Oops, All Cinderellas, which is all about Cinderellas. So it's really been a great learning experience for me. As well. I'm just like, I never even imagined all of these beautiful tales. And it's fun to see the ones that cross over, and it's fun to see the ones that I've never heard of before. So yeah, I guess I just keep wanting to enjoy stories, and I'm really happy to have an audience that enjoys them too.
And so if people want to check out your content, where can they find your stuff right now at this current moment social media the way that it is?
Open up that phone. So my username all across like any social media app you can think of is Cosbrarian, which is a combination of cosplay and librarian, because I used to do that a lot more. So COSBRARIAN, Cosbrarian. Use that in a sentence, please. I feel like I'm at a spelling bee. So that's on TikTok is where I started. That's where my biggest audience is, but I'm also on YouTube. I'm also on Instagram, and I post mostly the same video content across those channels. So if you have a favorite, you can find it there. Yeah.
All right. So we wrap up the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish related question. And so I've asked our guests before if they could rewrite a book from another character's point of view, what character would they choose from what book and why? But since we've been talking about fairy tales, I thought I'd pose to you specifically, like, what fairy tale would you like to see from another character's perspective?
Ooh, this is a challenge because I'll have to think of one that maybe hasn't been broached before, because I can think of one that exists that I just love. Vivian Vandeveld did this book called The Rumpelstiltskin Problem, where she kind of makes fun of the fairy tale, and then like she writes a bunch of short stories in response to that. So she does like them from Rumpelstiltskin's point of view and other stuff like that. That's a great example of it. But what's one that hasn't been done as much that I would like to think of? I don't know, maybe that's the problem with this is I feel like every idea I'm going to think of might already exist, but like maybe like a maybe like a Literary Riding Hood from the wolf's point of view. Maybe I could enjoy learning a little more about the huntsman, maybe in Snow White, but like not the Chris Hemsworth one, like a different one. I didn't like that movie very much. maybe, I don't know, who else is in there? Maybe I'd like to see the Blue Fairy just like roast Pinocchio. I would be into that. mostly lady characters, though. There's a lot of female characters in fairy tales, luckily, already. And actually, they're not all damsels in distress like people commonly think, like we have been led to believe. But there's always more time for more ladies. So maybe some of those peripheral people. The one thing I don't need as much of is like from the villain side, like justifying their villainous. I'm like, okay, yeah. we've done that a lot. Let's do maybe like a little supporting side character. How about you?
I'm trying to think if I have one because I feel like I'm not super versed on fairy tales in general, especially like outside of the whole kind of like Disney narrative.
Oh, sure. Well, that's a good place to start. Like, what happened to Rapunzel's parents after they lost their baby? Because the Tangled version is nothing like actual, when they say actual Rapunzel, there's many versions of Rapunzel, but they're just ordinary people that lost their baby because she had a pregnancy craving. That stinks. Did they have more children? I'm worried about them.
Yeah. Y'all okay?
Were they reunited? Yeah. We'll never know.
Yeah, I see, the first thing that I thought of, which is more folklore, and it was something that we talked about in another episode, but kind of like a Robin Hood story, but from other characters' perspective, kind of like,
oh, yeah,
more of a like a Maid Marian perspective. I would enjoy that because I generally really enjoy the Robin Hood stories. If you want to see a version of Robin Hood where Maid Marian like has a lot of agency and character development, the BBC Robin Ooh. Hood that they made series, it kind of jumped the shark in the last season, but like the beginning is really good. Because it was a show, you were able to get like so much more character development for like everyone.
Oh, definitely. That's a great idea for an ensemble cast.
Like the first, I would say like three or four seasons are really good.
Did you already talk about there's a couple YA twists with that premise of like Robin Hood from other points of view?
No, we didn't talk about ones that already exist.
Well, I can let you know there's there's Scarlet by A.C. Goggin, I think her name is. And that one is like Maid Marian is in disguise as Will Scarlet. So you get that like, you know, lady playing a boy aspect. And then there's Sherwood, which is like it's like a sequel to Robin Hood, I believe. After Robin Hood is killed and Maid Marian needs to deal with that. They're both a lot of fun. But you know whose story hasn't been told? Little John. It's got some love for Little John.
That's true. Yeah.
Robin Hood is very satisfying and it fits in the fairy tale world. It's technically a legend because it's maybe he was real, maybe not. It's, you know, it's got that feeling. It's got the themes of a fairy tale.
I just like that that's like a theme in like English, like folklore kind of. Yeah. It's like maybe he was real. Because I feel like the same thing with King Arthur is like, maybe he was real. Yeah. Like, there's kind of that vibe through the whole story of like, but he might be real, though.
And some people truly, truly believe it.
Yeah. He just went somewhere.
He went away because he was too good for this world.
There's so many different versions of that, of like dying in battle or just like, yeah, he goes to the Avalon. Is that the place?
Yeah, I love King Arthur. I mean, that's something to delve into. There are so many more stories to Arthurian legend than just like the Camelot, you know, love triangle story. The Green Knight, you know, kind of did that. That's one of the stories. And I would love to see more of that. Feature some of those knights at that round table.
For the class that was like early British literature, we read Gawain and the Green Knight. And then I wrote a paper about how Mass Effect is kind of like a modern retelling of Arthurian legend in space.
Ooh, you know what that means? They should make a King Arthur video game.
I got like a B on that paper because I was like kind of stretching it a little bit. But the concept, I was like, the vibes were good, I thought.
Hey, B is still better than average. you nailed it. In college, you just need to pass.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't know.
Sorry. Don't tell that to the kids in school. You should aspire to do better.
Put effort. It works out in the end. But thank you for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you would like to respond to our last chapter question or turn me on to some fairy tales that I've never heard of before, you can email us at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to us via social media with the hashtag DowntimeCPL. And if you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. And this has been another episode of Downtime. Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza, and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime.
And they lived happily ever after.
Yep. For some reason, my brain was like, in podcast heaven. And then I was like, that's dark.
Very Little Mermaid of you.